This episode of Talk Central is brought to you by Pinnacle, Africa's top ICT distribution business, delivering the exceptional every time.
I'm Richard Verberg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 229 for the week starting 5 August 2018.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central. WhatsApp the show on 071-999-1111.
On Talk Central this week, Apple is a trillion-dollar company and a look ahead at the next iPhone.
Also this week, Huawei overtakes Apple to become the world's second largest smartphone maker. Liquid Telecom looks to unlock its spectrum assets in South Africa. And a new foot-long camera lens that will give you a bug's eye view of the world.
Talk about a close-up, eh? It's Sunday, it's 1 p.m. We're live on live.techcentral.co.za and it's time to talk everything technology.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Very good, thanks. Welcome back to the studio.
Mm.
You have a show house tonight, today, so I thought you'd pop into the studio. So welcome. And,
thank you.
What do you think of that beer that you're drinking, by the way?
I'm surprised. For the price you said you paid for it, it's an import. It's a pretty easy drinking beer.
It's very nice, yeah.
I would never buy it seeing it, looking at it on the shelf, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it hasn't got the greatest label, does it? It's imported from Germany, Eichbaum Red Beer, and it's actually quite not bad.
It's very smooth, it's very easy drinking, yeah.
It's cheaper than local beer at Checkers.
Yeah, I'll do some research into it. I saw one or two things online about it. It just seems like it's a general kind of export beer for them.
Yeah.
Which is,
yeah. I don't know how they get it so cheap, but it's quite nice.
Is there really such a thing as bad beer, except when you look at lagers?
Well, yeah, depending on some of the stuff.
We won't get into that conversation.
Let's not go there. Yeah. So not Beer Central, it's Tech Central. Talk Central, so let's talk tech. But before we get into the week's news, let's do our quiz.
The first question, F&B announced this week that its clients can use which two company smartwatches to tap and pay at a point of sale?
MTN has reportedly been forced to dial back plans to roll out fiber to the home in which country?
Third question, Julian Assange is reportedly getting ready to leave the Ecuadorian embassy in London. How many years has he been held up there?
And the fourth question, Apple this week became the first U.S. company with a market value of $1 trillion. But it's not the first company in the world to reach this milestone. Which company got there first?
And the final question, Huawei has overtaken Apple to be the world's second largest supplier of smartphones. Samsung is still in first place, but who occupies fourth and fifth places respectively?
As always, we'll get to the answers to the quiz at the end of the show. Just a reminder, you can send us WhatsApps, either live on air or during the week when you're listening to the podcast. The number to use is 071-999-1111. That's 071-999-1111. We love to get your feedback on the show, so please keep them coming. Especially if they're voice notes, we can play them back on air. But let's dive straight into this week's news, Richard. And Apple, now $1 trillion market valuation. I know we've spoken about this on a number of occasions in this podcast in the past, and my prediction, now proved wrong, was that Amazon was going to beat Apple to it. But Apple's made it.
We should have put some Bitcoin on that. Damn.
But $1 trillion on the back of strong quarterly results published last week. And I think they topped out at about $1.02 trillion. But the upward march of Apple continues, and largely thanks, I think, to the iPhone as one of the most successful, if not the most successful, consumer product in history.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't miss the walled garden. But yeah, that's just my two cents.
You're out of the Apple world now, right?
Yeah, pretty much, apart from an iPad.
Yeah.
But isn't it incredible? I mean, I think in a few years' time, $1 trillion is going to be, you know, probably the top 10 businesses are all going to have capped that. Mm. I guess it's also the evolution of economics. You know, money just, I guess, doesn't mean as much as what it used to. Just put a few zeros at the end of it.
$1 trillion. It's quite remarkable. Of course, they're not the first company to get there. A Chinese company called PetroChina, all the way back in 2007, achieved a market cap of $1 trillion. It only did so very briefly, though, and then collapsed. All the way down to, I think, something like $200 billion. Still a lot of money.
That's a big drop. Wow.
But it's a hell of a drop. But Apple's not the first. But they are the first U.S. company to get there and the first technology company to get there.
And what makes it so interesting for me is, I mean, it's a premium product. You know, this isn't something for the – well, I guess more people own it now, but it's not really kind of the everyday man's brand, if you think about it. It's just too expensive. I mean, people can buy it in various ways now, like paying it off and that kind of thing. But it just shows you. It's not about the price you sell something at. If the product is there and the desirability is there. Yeah. And I've never been able to fault Apple on most of their products. I mean, their stuff works.
Mm. The only thing I've recently been able to fault them on is the lack of a headphone jack in the iPhone. And the rumor is that the new iPad's also going to lose the headphone jack. And it's a big drawback for me. I don't want to have to carry a dongle. But you're right, they're fantastic products. There's no doubt about it. They are priced as premium products because they can. And the price has been creeping up. The price of the iPhone has been creeping up for a long time. Compared to that original, how much was the original iPhone? I think it must have been about $600 or $700.
Yeah, I remember the early conversations when they just got to 10 grand. It was a pretty big thing. And now they almost double that.
Oh, but over 20 grand.
Over 20, yeah. But having said that, I've recently saw a few info sheets from some of the operators, and I was surprised to see that you can get two generation old, so the iPhone 6 and 7, you can get them at a pretty good price now for $200 on a contract. You can get one of those iPhones.
Yeah. But they're quite dated in terms of the hardware.
Well, I mean, I was looking at them simply because I wanted to, you know, if I was just looking around, my contract's coming to an end. I'm not going to upgrade, but I was just seeing what if, what are the options? And I also wanted to stick with the 3.5mm headphone jack. So looking at that generation, and to be honest with you, that iPhone generation is still more than sufficient for what most people need.
Yeah, no, indeed.
But yeah, I decided not to go with that.
Yeah, you went to Android
instead. Yeah, for no contract, right?
one of the most successful companies in history, there's no doubt about it. Whatever you think of the company's products and their pricing strategy, and a lot of people complain about the Apple tax, the fact is they've been able to charge those prices and people continue to buy these products. You don't see the iPhone so much here in South Africa. I mean, this is very much an Android market, as all developing markets are. But you go to the States and it's just iPhone wall to wall, particularly on the east and west coasts of America.
Well, you say that. I'm surprised at the amount of people that have got iPhone Xs. I see it around and I see so many people. Okay, not everybody, but I see a lot of people and young-ish people carry around that expensive phone. Now, that obviously tells you that getting access to these devices isn't as difficult with contracts these days.
Yeah.
But it's a grand and a half price that you pay for it over 2 years.
It's a very aspirational product. It's a very aspirational product. Many people just want the device because it's got that Apple logo on it.
Mm. And also, let's not forget, they did kind of make apps what they are today. You know, smartphones before Apple, the Apple Store and the appification of software on a mobile device really spurred up an entire industry.
Yeah.
Before that, smartphones were just kind of, they were trying to find their own way, really.
Yeah. There's been lots of talk, of course, that Apple has become a one-product company, that this iPhone is responsible for the vast majority of their revenues today. Of course, they've got huge businesses in things like iPad, Mac computers, which includes desktops and laptops. Mm. They've got their smartwatch business. These are all significant businesses, but the iPhone still makes up the bulk of their business. It's been such a singularly successful product. And the question is, can they repeat it at some point? And certainly some of the analysis that was coming out this week about how Tim Cook, the CEO, is trying to do that, points to the next major revenue stream being not so much a new product category, but building a large services ecosystem around the iPhone. So things like Apple Music, App Store, there's tons of things that they're building around the iPhone. Whether that's ever going to reach the same sort of size as simply selling the iPhone hardware, it's difficult to know.
Yeah.
But they are definitely intently focused on that. I think replicating the success of something like iPhone is almost impossible.
Look, they can certainly build it, and I guess how do you improve a square shape with a screen on it? But if you do look at what they've been able to achieve with what you've mentioned now, the App Store, the ecosystem, I mean, it's kind of, they've put the benchmark app there for what handheld tech is about.
Mm-hmm.
Where they have dropped the ball quite significant, in my opinion, is on their desktop and PC market. Now, you know, until recently, I was a big MacBook fan. I just couldn't get, what was in, where do I go from the MacBook that I had? It was a 2015 model, I think it was. But the current high-end models was either way too expensive, in my opinion, overpriced for what you get. I mean, you can get an equivalent PC that can do a lot more in terms of functionality. And it shouldn't have been the case. You know, Apple was always the guys that you go to for high-end video editing. Mm. If you wanted something, I mean, you can't. I do like their design, their shape. But again, because they're not innovating on that, in, I guess, in the right ways, the current models have suffered from some heat issues. Now, they updated it with some software, but it just shows you that there was an underlying issue to begin with. Mm-hmm. And I really want them to I want to see them doing something new in that range, in the desktop notebook kind of market. But it shows you that mobile is where I think everything is going and where their attention is clearly lying.
Is there any reason to buy a MacBook over a Windows PC these days? I mean, Windows 10 is a very good operating system, especially since all the updates that have come out.
Yeah.
You can get all the, even if you're creative, which is the market that these machines typically targeted in the past, you now get the full functioning Adobe Suite, for example, running on Windows, just as it does on Mac. Office was always a poor second cousin on Mac. I think it's caught up a lot. I don't think it's quite there yet. But, the apps you can get on Mac and Windows are fairly similar, but by the same token, there's more you can get on Windows than you can get on Mac.
Oh yeah,
you can do gaming on Windows, which is very limited on Mac. Mm. Why beyond the brand and the perception of quality would you consider a MacBook over, say, a high-end Windows-based Dell or Lenovo?
I don't think there's any reason to. And I actually recently made that switch from. You know, I mean, from being everything Apple-based to now having a desktop machine, a notebook that is Windows-based, and obviously Android. There is no. I was very afraid of switching back to Windows on a full-time basis. I was on the desktop for a while with Windows 10, you know, playing games and stuff, and it was fine. I mean, I didn't really delve into much of Windows then. It was just a single serving machine. Mm. But now that my notebook, I'm on a Windows-based notebook again, and I really have to kind of entrench everything that I do on a Windows environment. I'm asking myself a question again, like why. Why is an Apple environment so enticing and so appealing to so many people? There isn't really much there beyond. I mean, it works well, and if I can afford, I would much rather buy my mom, for example, a MacBook or iPad rather than a Windows-based machine. I just think that, you know, in certain cases, Apple makes a lot of sense. You know, they really do certain things really well. But for everybody else, and for those of us that are really into technology, yeah, it's difficult to go, especially when prices in coming into the fact, it's very difficult to justify MacBook. Mm. And that's why I couldn't upgrade to a MacBook again. That's why I went back to, I get more bang for my buck on a Windows machine. And that's really where it matters. Give me a better graphics card. Give me 32 gigs of memory rather than just a 16. You know, there's a lot of factors there.
I'd be more inclined to buy a MacBook than I would be to buy an Apple desktop, because that's where the prices are insane. Those Mac Pros are, you know, difficult to upgrade, exceptionally expensive. Whereas you take, to build a high-end machine, you take 50,000 Rand, for example. You can build a top-specced PC for that price. But in the Apple universe, you look at the Mac Pro, you're probably paying 20, 30K more than that for a base model. Does it really make any sense anymore?
No, and this is where, you know, I struggle with the concept of like consumerism and people driven to buy stuff that they don't need or don't need to afford, you know. And again, this is where if you're just an educated consumer looking at, and I was specking out my desktop machine the other day, came to about 30 grand just for the box, 32 gigs of RAM, Core i5, 1070 graphics card. I mean, it's got everything you need. It's not high end, it's kind of mid to high, but equivalent equivalent desktop Mac, iMac or whatever, would be 50 grand in that department, and you can't upgrade it from there. And that's the other thing, you know, with a desktop, you'd expect at least some level of upgradability.
It's form over function in the
exactly.
Apple world.
Yeah. Where Apple has got it right with their notebooks, and I'll always love it for that, and that's why I do love the MacBook platform, is that those things last. You know, a MacBook could outlast a PC probably by 2 years, I would argue, because it's of the operating system and kind of the walled garden, because they look after their older hardware. Mm. Whereas you can probably argue that a PC, you know, 5 years old won't run as well as a MacBook. And that's been in my experience with all my Macs, because I've only bought in my lifetime, I think, about two or three Macs, because they just last so long.
Well, you know, in the Windows world, that every few years you have to reformat your hard drive and reinstall Windows to get the performance back.
No, for sure. And with Mac, I did the same thing because everything gets kind of bloated.
That does it on Mac too, does it?
Yeah. It doesn't show itself as well, not as apparent as what Windows is. But Windows 10 is fantastic. I mean, it's very little wrong with this operating system, apart from some of the stuff that they install by default, all this game that come up in the start menu. So the first thing I do when I install Windows is uninstall a lot of that stuff it comes with.
I wish they would get rid of the start menu. I know there was such an outcry with Windows 8 when they got rid of the start menu, but I don't use it at all.
I use it. It frees up my taskbar, because at the moment my taskbar gets full with a lot of icons. I use it for a lot of shortcuts.
I've got maybe 12 icons in my taskbar, and I find that's more than adequate. And if I need an app, I just click the search icon, type a name, hit enter.
True. Yeah,
I don't need to start the start button.
But again, why was there such an outcry when they removed it? People weren't ready. It was too soon, maybe.
People don't like
change. But why don't you give you the option just to switch it off?
I wish I could switch it off, yeah. I actually hope that in a future Windows 10 update, they give you the option to switch off the start menu, because I'd rather just have the little search icon there rather than the Windows flag.
I'm actually surprised Windows, I mean, any operating system hasn't gotten to that level of customizability yet. I mean, customizing user interface, once you've got the operating system, the kernel and everything running, it's a very relatively easy thing. Give us a base of options that we can customize, remove. I mean, it's still there, right? You just don't have it on your user interface.
Yeah. Maybe it's because they sell ads into the start menu. Maybe that's the real reason.
Maybe. No.
I mean, have you seen the rubbish they put in the start menu? It's
that's part of the stuff.
Actually, I've cleaned mine up, so you can't see
I've also removed some of the stuff, but that's where all those games and stuff, why would they install Candy Crush on my machine?
Because they paid to put it there.
But people get upset about Internet Explorer being bundled on every with every machine and not the games.
Yeah, actually, I quite like Edge while you're talking about Internet Explorer. I don't like Internet Explorer, which is still bundled with Windows 10. It's outdated, horrible software. But Edge is actually quite a good browser. I'm using it to run Netflix on my TV now.
Yeah, I must actually play with it. I mean, Windows does. That's one thing that's pretty funny about using Windows again. It tells me at every opportunity it can that it wants me to use Edge.
But Google does the same thing. If you go to any Google site using a non-Chrome browser, you're going to see this message flagged across the site saying, you should be using Chrome because of this and this reason. Mm. Download it here.
Look, I'm still a big fan of Chrome. I still have it running with everything, and I love it.
I haven't used Chrome. I use Chrome on my Android phone, but I have stopped using it completely on my desktop and my laptop. I've gone for Vivaldi, which is based on the Chromium engine. And I just like the customization of Vivaldi. They still haven't got the sync quite right yet, but every other aspect of it is fantastic. Chrome, I found, was just getting, I don't know, a bit flaky. It would crash, and maybe it was just my installation, but...
And give up so quickly.
I'm very happy with Vivaldi. It's my default browser. But I mean, browsers I have here on my laptop. I'm just looking at it. I've got. I don't run Firefox anymore. I got rid of that. So Vivaldi is my basic. I use Edge as a backup, and then I have Chrome as well, because there are still some sites that don't work properly in non-Chrome browsers, like Google Earth. I'm looking at you, Google.
Well, I wouldn't blame them for not working. Why would they spend effort on any other operating system?
Well, they should, because they should. Microsoft had a similar sort of approach. And in fact, it wasn't just Microsoft. It was many web developers. They would develop for Internet Explorer only. And we had that horrible era of a few years where you'd fire up a website and it would pop up a notification saying, this website only works with Microsoft Internet Explorer. Remember those days?
The terrible days, yeah. Because everybody was designing, what was that package that came with Office? Front Page. Everybody was designing their websites in Front Page.
That must have been one of the most awful pieces of software ever written.
No, that's where I learned to code HTML. It made me want to go back into it, but I haven't used it for 20 years.
I think they discontinued it a long time ago. Microsoft Front Page, That brings back nightmares.
Yeah, good old memories of just figuring out the internet when it was still in its infancy.
Yeah. Remember Netscape Navigator?
Mm. Yeah, I played with that for a while as well. It was fine, but I mean, back then, a browser was really a browser. It was just speed. Yeah. It was really. But today, the browser is more. It's so much more. And this is why the emphasis on the browser is so important. Mm. I think your browser is your window to the world. It's like your operating system that's running the internet.
Yes.
In a frame, in a window, and that's why we can't afford to mess around. So I'm happy with Chrome because it does what I need it to do. It hasn't really crashed on me. It doesn't give me any issues, touch wood.
What was the first browser you ever used?
Oh, it was definitely... it may have been Alta Vista. No.
That was a search engine.
But what was the one that came bundled with those MWeb CDs? Was it Netscape?
Could have been Netscape.
I think it was Netscape Navigator.
Okay, yeah.
I remember my friends had that installed when I went to their house and, you know, go do IRC and kind of explore the internet.
Netscape Navigator. Later became Netscape Communicator, but by then they'd already lost the plot. And Microsoft was chasing hard. My first web browser was something called NCSA Mosaic.
Wow.
Which I think was a predecessor to Netscape, if I'm not mistaken. But this was that was 25 years ago.
Yeah, that's before web browsers were really a thing, a big thing.
Yeah, so that was just in the early days. That was one of the very first web browsers. Could have even been the first one. I don't remember.
My first web browser was a DOS window, Duncan. That's how legit I am.
What, text-based web? There was a text-based web browser back in the day, remember?
Well, you would connect. I remember connecting the first experience I had when I managed to buy like a 2-4 modem or something, an internal modem.
Yeah.
Trying to connect to my friend's house. He also had a PC. And then we didn't have the internet to actually kind of look up to do what to do, right? So you just try and figure out and ask people. And it was like connecting to somebody else's house, and then his machine would pick up, and then you would have a connection. But it was very slow. You couldn't do much. There was nothing. I mean, you couldn't transfer anything. Music-wise, MP3 wasn't the thing then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good old days.
You're probably too young to remember Baltel.
I know of it, but yeah, I don't.
I used Baltel.
Apart from knowing Bell telephones.
I used Baltel when I was a kid. It was a Telkom product. And, the post offices they were known then, I think.
Wasn't it Telnet as well? I think that. I used something later on. This is what I'm talking about. Like, it was definitely. There was a text based plugin.
MultiChoice. Mnet had something on their platform. Remember, there was some text based service they used to broadcast with news headlines and weather and stuff, which is kind of similar to
horse race results.
Yeah, stuff like that. But Baltel in the 1980s, I can't even remember what technology it used. We had it at home, and it would literally fire up a text menu. It would take about half a minute for the text menu to download.
Wow.
You'd press an option, then wait another 30 seconds for the next menu to fill up the screen.
Well, you had it at home. That was pretty. Yeah, I mean, that was pretty impressive. I didn't know anybody who had internet connection until
it wasn't the. Oh, it wasn't the internet.
Well, not
it
the internet, but it was still connected services.
Some
right?
Sort of connected service. Yeah,
I mean, that was way more advanced than my family ever was. Yeah, my exposure, my first exposure was really getting hooked on that concept of IRC, being able to speak to anybody anywhere in the world.
Oh yes,
that really blew my mind, and that's where I think it was 95 or 94.
Yeah. Yeah, IRC is still around and going strong, actually, amazingly.
Yeah, and I can't believe we were sitting like we do gaming now. We were sitting in front of our PCs chatting to people, like for hours and nights and days on end. I mean, it was beyond insane. And now you still do that, but you do it while you're playing games.
That was text-based. In those early days of the internet, that's pretty much all you could do.
You could slap people with a trot. You remember that? /slap, and then you would slap a person and just come up with a text. Very hard to slap this person with a smelly trot.
Oh, man, we've come a long way. Instead of trot, we now have chicken dinners.
And now we have WhatsApp, too. Which is just the evolution of that, right? But it's more personal.
Yeah. Well, there have been so many instant messaging platforms over the years that have just come and gone. I'm trying to remember the ones I used to use. There was a very popular one for Windows in the late 1990s, kind of before Google Talk took off. IRQ or ICQ.
ICQ.
That was huge at one stage.
That was massive.
Remember, it had the little flower icon.
Yes, I used that too. I haven't thought about that in years. And then there was a local one developed by another company in China, I think, called QQ.
Oh, no. QQ is the biggest chat service in China. That's part of WeChat.
No, but it started off. QQ started off. They marketed heavier. There was a South African band that wrote a song about it.
QQ.
QQ, yeah. Oh, it was. It might be an evolution of QQ now. I must actually look it up. Yeah. But there was definitely a QQ in that era.
And of course there was
a little penguin icon. Yeah, it's the same.
Yeah.
Tencent,
QQ. Yeah.
Maybe they trialed it here. But I mean, it was, well, they tried to push it big. Yeah, I remember in local pop culture, it was everywhere. QQ was just, nobody used it, I think. Yeah. But now everybody in China's using it,
yeah. It became huge there. And of course we had Mixit. Homegrown Mixit, which was hugely successful at one point. It was very popular amongst kids, and it's now dead. I think BlackBerry had a big impact on that, and then, of course, WhatsApp, I think, finished it off.
Did you ever use that?
I played with it briefly, but I never used it I never really used it, but I knew a lot of youngsters who were addicted to it. I mean, they were on it all day and all night. It was particularly a feature phone product. Mm-hmm. It wasn't really a smartphone product. So when the market was Nokias and all these sort of things, people used it on those platforms. And then smartphones came, then WhatsApp came, and
things got a bit more flashy. Well, it addressed a very specific need, and I think it's the Kodak of the era, right? It's addressed a need, and it just wasn't able to innovate to stay up with what the guys wanted.
Yeah.
And I tried to resuscitate it once or twice. I remember there was there were one or two relaunches where they did some cool things.
Mm.
But yeah, sadly, not anymore.
Eh? No more. I don't know how we went from Apple's $1 trillion market cap to talking about local instant messaging software, but we did. I like it when the conversations actually go on a tangent.
Secret of the segue.
But let's bring it back to Apple, because I want to talk a little bit about their next iPhones. And there's quite a lot of – I think we pretty much know everything that's going to be in those new iPhones now. If you look at some of the detailed reports that have collected all the analysts – all the rumors out there, I don't think that Apple is really able to keep a secret ahead of an iPhone launch anymore, mm-hmm. nor is any manufacturer really. We know the Note 9, which is being launched this week, we'd know just about everything about it. And by the time the new iPhones launch, we're going to know everything about them as well. And I think we already know a lot. So the current rumors are there are going to be three new iPhones. There's going to be a entry-level 6.1-inch device. We don't know what it's going to be called yet, but it's going to have the talk is it's going to have an LCD screen of some kind, so not the OLED you find in the iPhone X,
mm-hmm.
And that this is really going to replace the iPhone 8 and iPhone 8 Plus. So one device to kind of fit into that segment. Not going to be cheap. The rumors are around $800. But it looks like it's going to be a nice high-end device with the latest hardware and all the rest of it inside it. And then the talk is there are going to be two new iPhone devices. There's going to be a successor to the iPhone X, which is going to, once again, according to the rumors, be a 5.8-inch device, same as the iPhone X. And then there's talk, which actually has me interested a little bit in the Apple ecosystem, again, from an iPhone perspective, is the rumored iPhone 10 Plus, or whatever it's going to be called, which will have a 6.5-inch OLED display. And will also apparently feature a very high-end camera setup. We don't have the detail. The rumors are a little murkier on the likely camera setup of these next phones. The rumor is that the iPhone 10 successor and the iPhone 10 Plus are going to both going to feature at least dual high-resolution cameras on the rear. Which is not surprising. Possibly even on that Plus, a triple camera setup a la the Huawei P20 Pro. And the 6.1-inch cheaper, and I use the word cheaper in inverted commas, a 6.1-inch iPhone is likely just to have one rear camera in order to bring the price down somewhat. I'm actually more excited about this September's Apple keynote than I have been for a number of years. The iPhone X was a bit of a disappointment to me. I thought it was a refresh of the design of the thing, but it didn't really take things forward.
Yeah.
I'm also kind of looking forward to the fact that iOS is not being overhauled once again with tons of features added to it. Rather, this is a update that focuses on performance and battery life and reliability. Which is quite exciting as someone who owns an older generation iPad.
Mm.
I'm looking forward to seeing how that performs on the new iOS. But I'm actually quite excited. I actually think I'm a little bit more excited about Apple's lineup this year than I have been for a while. I still don't think I'm going to be buying one, but I'm going to have a close look at that iPhone 10 Plus or whatever it's called, because that sounds like the right size for me. Mm. I like big phones.
And again, to me, I mean, the consumer is going to win because there's a massive range of iPhones out there. I mean, I tend to forget at least that iPhone doesn't just do one device. I mean, there was for a long period iPhone just did the iPhone, right? The iPhone was the iPhone. Now there's various models, various generations worth of models. And with every new generation coming out, the previous ones become, I guess, a bit cheaper, mm-hmm. a bit more affordable. And the software, in most cases, is still backwards, so they push the capabilities of the software to work on the older devices that they still sell. So you would still benefit from the new operating system.
Yes.
So from that point of view, I'm always excited. But I'm not ready to go back to an iPhone just yet. I want to explore some more Android. But I would love to get one in my hands and play with it, without a doubt.
Mm.
But it's less enticing once you kind of once you open your mind to the broader world of other things. But you can't fault. There's often something I want to do with my Android phone that just seems a little bit more tricky with an Android device. Not that it's impossible to do or not that you can't do it. It's just a different way of doing it, or it's just not as straightforward, you know.
The thing that really appeals to me about the iPhone is the fact that you get the latest updates when they're available. That bugs the hell out of me on Android, that I have to wait for my operator or my I have to wait for my operator and this handset manufacturer to release the software before I can get it. And it takes too long. I want the software when it's ready.
So you're almost a step removed from Android every time you miss out on a new update, right? And it just feels like, okay, there's something is disconnected with Apple, with iPhone, you get that. So, and again, everybody benefits from that rollout unless it's too old a device and you can't get the update. But that only happens with devices that's, 7, 8 years old. I've never had a device that I can't upgrade to anything because I usually give it away by then.
That's absolutely right. The Apple supports older generation hardware much longer than Android smartphone manufacturers. I think if you buy a high end Android phone today, you're lucky if you're going to get 2 years of updates.
But it just seems like Android, they've got the power to make it so much easier. I guess I know the answer to this because companies want to make money. But the Android platform, if your phone can run Android, you should be able to then manage that installation yourself if you really want to do it. So for the techies of us,
a lot of people can root it.
I guess, but it should be a lot easier. So let me, if I know that there's an update out there, I'll void my warranty or whatever, but let me update it. Let me get this version that I can push. I mean, you can't tell me that the settings for the operators are that complicated that I can't just download. Well, you can download a little file that'll install the settings for you.
Microsoft has had this right for years. You can get the latest versions of Windows on your machine. You just go into Windows Update. Why can't you do the same on your Android? Mm.
I think that was the intention all along, but because of the fragmentation we get with the various, and again, you've seen the chart, right, with how many Android devices running which version. I mean, there's this colorful chart you can find online. Just Google it, and you'll see there are thousands of various devices all running various versions of Windows, all currently in the market, and that's creating obviously a problem for security. People developing apps say, it's difficult to develop for all these phones and all these devices. So it's kind of trying to make something open source and giving it to the people. Then you do have this problem where it can kind of get taken too far, I guess, where companies don't allow the updates.
Maybe the answer is for Google to push some sort of program where they certify devices to say that these devices are going to get the latest versions of Android within a certain period after the release and for a certain period of years. And they certify it. Put the Android logo or whatever it is, Google certified on the device when you buy it, and this is guaranteeing you that you're going to get 3 years of updates and that when there's a major new Android release, you're going to get it within, say, a month of release or something like that.
Yeah, it can all be done based on specs. I mean, we know that smartphones are so advanced these days, you can do so much. They don't get dated, generally speaking, unless there's like some fancy AR, VR feature that everybody wants that you can't get. I mean, but we don't want that. Just give me best security updates. Performance improvements is a big thing. There's so many ways that the code gets improved, but those guys with the bare-bone smartphones don't benefit from that because they don't get those updates.
Yeah, and I mean, we've spoken about it before. At the lower end, it's actually a major problem because it's actually affecting poorer consumers because it's poorer consumers who are more at risk of security vulnerabilities because it's those devices, those cheap Androids that are not getting patched with the latest software updates.
Exactly. But that's unfortunately where the companies wanting to make money is the problem. We need to just educate and tell the people, let the people talk for them. Educate them so that they can request these things, these services.
Yeah. So from that perspective, I do like the iPhone, but lack of a headphone jack and the high price putting me off. But maybe this will be the year I get an Apple.
Wait, no, really? I can't believe you just said that. just when I went off it. Now we're not going to be the same again. Now I'm going to
One of us has to use all the devices, right? we have to have a spread of operating systems here
Fair enough. Having multiple devices is another thing. So, I mean, having one of each is acceptable.
Yeah.
But, again, looking just at Android and some of the custom, something as simple as getting a custom ringtone, it is virtually, it's so difficult, virtually impossible to do it on an iPhone. You have to jump through so many hoops to get a custom ringtone. Mm. And it's a silly thing. And now I've got the ringtone that I've always had on all my devices for the last few years. I've got it back on my phone now. Mm-hmm. And because it's a simple audio file that I can play as a startup.
Yeah. It's that walled garden. Apple doesn't want you to tinker too much, which has advantages, I suppose, because it makes the platform easier to use and less.
But something as simple as setting a custom ringtone, right? I mean, that shouldn't be that shouldn't be an issue because of a walled garden.
Yeah,
security or staying within an app store. Yes, that's a good aspect of locking down.
That's true. All right, we need to take a quick ad break. We'll be back right after this.
Are you a search engine? Because you found me.
I feel we have a strong connection.
Well, you're pretty fly for a Wi-Fi. Should we drop it like a hotspot and head back to yours so we can show Max and snuggle? Let's get giga with it.
But I don't have fiber.
Don't get caught in 50 shades of delay. Broadband your horizons and switch to Vox's super fast, super reliable fiber network. Experience the momentum. Connect your world. Visit us at vox.co.za/fiber.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Welcome back to the show. How's it, Rechart?
How's it, Duncan?
So let's move along. Let's talk about some local news now. And I had a fascinating interview this week with Rashad Shah, who is the newly appointed CEO of Liquid Telecom South Africa. Of course, was previously CEO of Squidnet, the Internet of Things company, and Chief Strategy Officer at Dark Fiber Africa. Now, he's recently taken the reins at Liquid Telecom in South Africa, formerly Neotel. And I podcast that interview. It's well worth going to have a listen to it if you haven't heard it already. But an interesting part of the discussion I had with him was around Liquid Telecom spectrum assets. Now, they've got some interesting spectrum, which other players in this market, I think, would be quite keen to get their hands on. And we know this already because Vodacom tried unsuccessfully to buy them specifically because of those spectrum assets. Now, they're sitting with spectrum at 800 megahertz. They're the only operator in South Africa that has spectrum in the digital dividend TV band. Where the broadcasters are still sitting. They use a fancy way of, I think they call it interleaving between the signals. So they'll use spectrum only in areas where the broadcasters aren't using it, and vice versa. And they've got spectrum at 1800 megahertz and at 3.5 gigahertz, which are both very good bands for deploying 4G.
Mm.
And potentially even 5G down the line. Now, they haven't really monetized these assets. They've rolled out some LTE, not much at all, mainly here in Gauteng. And they've also rolled out many years ago, a legacy network based on a technology called CDMA, Code Division Multiple Access, I think it stands for. It was an American-favored technology. It was an old technology, the 2G technology that the U.S. mobile networks rolled out back in the 1990s, a bit like our 2G cellular networks with GPRS added to them, maybe a bit faster than that.
Mm-hmm.
But they only have a limited number of customers on those networks, and so they've got these assets in these three spectrum bands that they can make very good use of. Now, unfortunately, in South Africa, there are tough regulations around spectrum trading, so they can't simply sell these assets, or they have to be very careful about what they do with them. But Rashad Shah said they're in the process of looking at potential partnerships, possibly along the lines of what Rain has done with Vodacom, to take advantage of these spectrum assets. So it can be very interesting to see what comes out of those discussions, but we should be seeing an announcement then in the not-too-distant future. So, Rechart, you came across a really, really interesting story this week about a new camera lens, and I had a look at this thing. I think the story was on The Verge.
Mm.
It looks weird. I've never seen a camera lens like that.
Did you ever think that we're going to get a new lens design that really switches things up a bit? Now, this lens by manufacturers Venus Optics, I can't even pronounce the name, it's the Lawa 24mm f14 2x macro probe. Now, this thing looks unlike any lens you've ever seen in your life. It basically looks like a long mag-like torch, if you know what I'm saying. Like
very
it's got
thin.
It's got a very thin pipe, and then obviously the end that plugs into your camera, that switches into your camera, which works for both Canon and Nikon. obviously connects to those bodies. Now, what this lens is intended to be is to give you a new perspective and kind of just change things up, especially when you're looking at close-up and macro photography. Now, because this lens is so long, it essentially allows you to put the lens. You almost think of it as a extension for your lens, your lens's glass at the end. So you can push this thing closer to a subject without the subject then feeling like you're right on top of them with a big camera or with a big lens, because a lot of macro lenses aren't as long. They're quite short lenses. I see you looking at the video clip there also of shooting video with this lens, where you can actually go into something like a bottle, because it's quite a thin little round tube lens. You can stick it into places and get really interesting perspectives. So yeah, I mean, from that point of view, I've never seen anything like this, but from the footage and from some of the demo stuff that I've seen, this is pretty impressive. Now, the company, this is a crowdfunding initiative.
So it might not actually come.
Well, they've actually got it, but they want to. If you want to buy one, I think they're just getting pre-orders in. I'm just looking for the price now. It's over $1,000.
$1,500.
Yeah, it's not the cheapest. But again, if you're looking at some of the demo shots they've got for wildlife, some macro close-up shots of ants and bugs and things, and then also just the interesting video shots shooting through products, I see a lot of potential for something like that. It's really interesting. Now, if you look at the f-stop on that lens, the f14, so it's not not really recommended for low light photography. It's got an LED built in the front to kind of compensate for that for the not so ideal aperture size. F14 is a very big aperture, or very small aperture at least, sorry. So you're not going to let a lot of light in at F14, as opposed to F2, which is a really fast lens that allows you to get a lot more light in much quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And also then messes with the depth of field, so you get various depth of field.
But I'd imagine you'd want to be using this mainly for taking close-ups of insects and stuff, so you're probably going to be outdoors in good light.
Yeah, look, that's why there's an LED on the front, so it doesn't even matter. Even at low light, if you look at those bugs that they've shot, that would be under leaves and stuff, so the light there would be pretty bad.
Right.
Now, if you combine that with, you know, modern cameras can shoot at a very high resolution, or a very high ISO, without too much noise. So the combination of the two, I mean, it's not really an issue. I think the novelty of shooting with something like that outweighs that aperture rating.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, very, very interesting. I would be keen to get one of these in my lens bag.
Venus Optics.
It's waterproof, lightweight, and like I said, it's got 2:1 macro. So it's, you know, you can shoot pretty nice close ups with that. And you won't scare off any bugs.
I don't know, if I was a bug and I saw this lens coming towards me, I think I'd scarf it pretty quickly. But it's such an unusual looking lens. It's so cool. We'll include a link in the show notes for that one. But let's move along to our regular features. And our winner this week is, of course, Apple, first $1 trillion tech company in the world. Mm. Well done. Hell of an achievement for a company that was basically bankrupt 20 years ago. In fact, I think it was Business Week was tweeted out a picture of their cover from around the late 90s, when Apple was in a lot of trouble. And it had a picture of the old Apple logo on the cover, and it said, "Fall of an American Icon." That was just 20 years ago, and Business Week tweeted the cover this week and captioned it, "Oops."
Nice, that's clever. Those are two covers you want to keep, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Wired magazine had a great cover as well. I don't know if you remember it. I've probably got it in my office still. It had the Apple logo with barbed wire around it. I think the logo was bleeding a bit. And it just had one word underneath it, "Pray."
Mm.
I've still got that wired somewhere. I must dig it out.
But it shows you what a company can do if it faced a lot of criticism over the years. If you look at its walled garden, I mean, just that argument alone, the way that it designs products, what it pushes on customers. I think the result of what we're seeing is a company that's not putting out products that customers necessarily want, what they think the technology will be relevant for those customers, or the technology that they think the customers should do.
Yeah.
And if you look at the 3.5-minute more audio jack, yes, that's a big thing for us and one of the reasons why we won't buy products, but they're advancing the tech. I mean, if you look at it at a technical level, there's no reason why the 3.5mm should be there with any good wireless technology that we have.
Mm-hmm.
We just plugged into the kind of we still have 3.5mm devices, you know, mm-hmm. in car, your headphones. So we're the legacy, not the company, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that's, yeah, interesting stuff. Well done, Apple.
And our loser this week is Telkom, because they had a serious problem with their systems this week. If you're going to have a look at their Twitter account, you can get some insight into what happened there. But basically, they were offline, the whole company, their website, their billing systems, their in-store systems, their call centers, everything was down. I don't know if they're fully back online yet, but basically the whole of Telkom systems are offline for a good, I think, about 2 days. Mm. That must have cost them a lot of money and reputational damage. Difficult situation when you land up like this. Don't want to point fingers, because Tech Central had a bit of a hiccup on Friday as well. Our website was down for about 3 or 4 hours. It took us a while to bring it back up because of some rather arcane technical challenges that we had on the server. But touch wood, it's all fixed now. But Telkom, yeah, major operator going down for that sort of period of time in a competitive market where someone can simply walk across to another cell phone shop. Not great.
Yeah.
Not great. What's your pick this week, Gerhard?
So, Duncan, my pick is as a result of your recommendation, and it's kind of been I've been spending so much time on this thing. I don't know. It's become a bit of a problem.
I see you typing it into the show.
Yeah, I'm just about to type it in so you can see it. But Dying Light on Steam. It's a game set in a post-apocalyptic world where you're kind of free-running around a city. So it's kind of an open-world environment in a zombie-infested world.
What's not to like?
What's not to like? Yeah, Dying Light. It's available on Steam, but what a great game. I'm an online player. I enjoy playing against other people. So games like PUBG and Battlefield 1 online, that's kind of where I normally play, GTA, that kind of thing. But Dying Light's one of the few games that really kind of piqued my interest.
It's got multiplayer as well, right?
It's got some co-op multiplayer. We haven't actually played it. We've been trying to get some time to actually do that. But
fault.
I've just been engrossed in the storyline. And what you can do. I mean, so it's an open world, free world. You've got lots of missions. You can choose what you want to do, when you want to do it. Killing zombies are plenty with weapons that you build and pick up. And there's so much variation to this, which is what makes it interesting.
I've played about an hour or two of this. Unfortunately, I've been so busy, I haven't had a chance to pick it up again. But I thoroughly enjoyed those first hour or two. And the killing those zombies is quite satisfying, I must say.
And it gets so much more satisfying because your weapons increase and what you get exposed to. So with each of the quests that you complete, you get blueprints that you can build new things. Mm-hmm. But the whole thing about the game is really about just looting stuff. So going around, opening crates, picking locks, getting weapons. You do get guns eventually. But there's, I don't know what it is about this game, but it's got a lot of intrigue in it. I mean, the storyline is interesting enough.
The graphics are great.
The graphics are great, but the fact that you can run around, it's kind of parkour style where you run around buildings. You eventually get a grappling hook, so getting around is much easier, and then you can focus on other parts of the storyline. Mm-hmm. There's very few games that's really kind of caught my attention like this. And Dying Light 2 is coming out at some point. I don't know when, but the trailer is out. And that's looking even better. So it's nice to kind of get in on the first one, get the storyline going, and really enjoying. This is what gaming is about, just sitting down and playing a few hours of really enjoyable, whatever it is, in this case, zombie smashing. Yeah. And there are so many ways to kill zombies. It's absolutely fantastic. So Dying Light, well worth checking out. I got it on Steam at a special. I got it for 170. It's now about 440 Rand.
Wow, that was a good special.
That was a very good special. Mm. So while with checking out, there is some you can get some add-ons as well. I haven't even touched the add-ons. I'm still playing the original base game. But yeah, I don't think you'll get bored. If you like gaming and zombies, this is definitely one to check out.
Great stuff. And I will join you for some of that co-op at some point in the not-too-distant future.
You better.
My pick this week, again, photography related. I've picked an app called Mirror Lab for Android. Sorry, iOS users, there is no iOS version from what I can tell. But Mirror Lab for Android, it's pretty cool. It's kind of one of these photo touch-up apps, but it lets you do all sorts of cool things, cool effects. It's a bit difficult to describe, but it's very powerful. It's much more powerful than the sort of touch-up you get in Instagram, for example. You can really turn your photographs into pieces of art using the pre-built filters. You can also create your own custom presets, and you can do some pretty radical things with it. For example, I took a picture of a bird the other day. I took some pictures at a nature reserve here in Gauteng yesterday, and I applied a filter to it, and it made the bird look like it was standing in rippled water.
Oh, nice.
Very impressive stuff you can do with this little app. It's been around for quite a while, but I've just come across it. It's Android only, and it's called Mirror Lab. Well worth checking out if you're into your photography.
Yeah, it looks like there's some really cool like digital features that just turn your photograph into whether it's a fractal pattern or whether it's just taking a piece and enhancing it. It's really cool.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. And I think that's our show. Just a reminder that I've started a new show called Rock Central, where we focus on, well, play some great rock music. We've done 5 episodes now. So first 3 were focused on different styles of rock from the 1980s, then did modern progressive rock, and in the most recent one, which went live last night, Saturday night, recorded 1970s progressive rock. So if rock music's your thing, check out Rock Central. It's available in all major podcatchers. And we also now play out with a song pick each week. And it's my turn this week. What was your pick last week, Richard? I've forgotten.
The Fabulous Thunderbirds. Remember that beautiful song?
Yes, Fabulous Thunderbirds. Great, yeah. Great band name, yeah. I want to be playing out with a great pop rock song from the 1980s today by Genesis. It's a track called Land of Confusion, which seems kind of apt with what's going on in the world today. But before we play Genesis, let's do our quiz. The first question: F&B announced this week that its clients can use which 2 companies' smartwatches to tap and pay at the point of sale? Oh, I've got to give you the answer too. That's Garmin and Fitbit.
Second question: MTN has reportedly been forced to dial back plans to route fiber to the home in which country? And the answer there is Iran, because of uncertainty created by the planned reimposition of UN sanctions.
US sanctions.
US sanctions. Sorry.
Julian Assange is reportedly getting ready to leave the Ecuadorian embassy in London. How many years has he been holed up there? And that is 6 years.
What a long time to be in one place.
Yeah, it must have serious cabin fever.
Yeah. Wow. Fourth question. Apple this week became the first U.S. company with market value of $1 trillion. But it's not the first company in the world to reach this milestone. Which company got there first? And the answer there is PetroChina, all the way back in 2007.
And the last question in this week's quiz. Huawei has overtaken Apple to be the world's second largest supplier of smartphones. Samsung is still in first place, but who occupies 4th and 5th places, respectively, according to the IDC? And the answer there is Xiaomi and Oppo, both Chinese brands. Have you ever seen an Oppo phone?
I've seen photographs online, yeah. I mean,
if you haven't seen one, they're
not physically hold one. Yeah. But they are available in South Africa, aren't they?
Are they? I don't know.
I've seen some guys with them.
Okay.
Interesting.
I'm not sure. If they're not here, they'll be here soon, I'm sure. Be 5th largest smartphone maker in the world. Remarkable. Remember, you can reach us on the show. Our WhatsApp number is 071-999-1111. We'd love to hear from you, so please do drop us a voice note, and we may include it on a future show. But we're playing out today with Genesis, and this is a track called Land of Confusion.